Welcome back to this ongoing course on spiritual warfare. Today we're going to look at the subject of how in the world the battle moved from the heavenly realms with Michael and fighting Satan to the earth. And we saw that the angels were thrown down in that wonderful passage in Revelation. The battle is here, and it's a very real one here. Now, let me introduce you to a couple of people. Hillary, for instance, undergrad English major in a university here in the United States. When someone presented the story of Jesus Christ and challenged her and invited her to accept Jesus Christ into her life, this was her response. "I just don't believe the God of Christianity exists. God allows terrible suffering in the world, so he might be either all-powerful but not good enough to end evil and suffering, or else he might be all good, but not powerful enough to end evil and suffering. Either way, the all good, all powerful God of the Bible couldn't exist." Her friend Rob, boyfriend, entered the conversation and said this, "This isn't a philosophical issue to me. This is personal. I won't believe in a God who allows suffering, even if he or she or it exists. Maybe God exists, maybe not. But if he does, he can't be trusted." Those quotes are from a book by Tim Keller called The Reason for God. But it's a good question, isn't it? If there is a good God, a loving God who created this world, what happened anyway? What happened that today in the world there are millions of people that are on the verge of extinction who are starving? Right now, as I speak, there's a war going on in Ukraine, and every once in a while, some of the atrocities of that war slip out about families being killed, women being raped, children being stolen and brought back to Russia. How could such evil enter this world? What happened in this world that there is such evil in the world? And that's part of one part of evil. But what happens when evil hits you? What happens? Ted Turner is the owner of CNN and a television station, as well as ESPN and others. And he's somebody who, when he was a child, was planning to become a Catholic priest. But then his sister got sick, and he prayed for her healing, and she died. And he said, I can't believe in God anymore. I can't believe in a God that allows this kind of thing to happen. So what happened? Well, the Bible puts it in terms of the ongoing battle or the beginning of the battle here on earth. What happened? Well, you've got to go back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2. When you go there, you find the story of creation. And I'm going to read just some of those statements about creation. Now, it's interesting because I'm reading a book by Francis Collins right now, who is a scientist, who's a doctor, and talks about how he moved from atheism to faith as he considered the creation. And I just finished the chapter on the Big Bang, about how it all started and how that's one piece of evidence for a creating God. But when the Bible describes the creation, it describes a being so powerful, that God is so powerful, that with a word he says, "Let there be light," and there was light. But then notice some things that he says about it. God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light was good. And he separated the light from the darkness. God called the darkness day, and the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening and morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be a vault between the waters to separate the water from water." So God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above it. And it was so. And he called the vault sky, and there was evening and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear." And it was so. It was so. God called the dry ground land, and he gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. God said, "Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants, trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it according to their various kinds." And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And he said, let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from night. Let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years. And let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth. And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the vault of the sky to give light to the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And God saw, let the water teem the living creatures. Let the birds fly above the earth, across the sky, the vault of the heaven. And so God created the great creatures of the sea and every living thing with which in the water teems and that moves about in it according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number, and fill the water in the seas, and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and morning, a fifth day. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, creatures that move along the ground, the wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our own image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish of the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God saw all that he made. And behold, he said, that's very good. Creating man in his own image, in his own likeness. Now, theologians have discussed for century upon century what that means for us, that we are in the image of God, but somehow we are like God. Some find it in the idea that we're able to will and we're able to plan, that we are able to rule the creation, that we are able to create, that makes us like God. But God made a creature and said, that's very good. Now, the painting that's up here is of is in the Sistine Chapel. In the Sistine Chapel in Rome, which is the chapel in which the Pope of the Catholic Church worships, there are frescoes. In other words, Michelangelo lay on his back for a long, long time creating this, and there's thousands of pictures. I had the privilege of being in there once, and you almost can't take it in. But this is the panel that describes the making of man and this creature in the image of God. And you'll notice, I love the comments by those who have looked at this painting and studied it. Some of them are reported by John Ortberg in his book, God is Closer Than You Think. But in there, it says, look at God here. God is moving toward this created being, Adam, the first man. And he's eagerly reaching forward to touch that man and to make him become a living being. But man is kind of sitting back, kind of lazily holding his finger out to have that magic touch. God created man and said, look at this world I've created. It's very, very good. But then, all you got to do is jump to chapter 3 of Genesis, and things begin to change. Something happens here. We read that the serpent came and comes to Eve. God in chapter 2 creates Eve, says it's not good for man to be alone. And so he made a creature like him, somebody that was taken out of man. So Adam called her woman. And she's like man. She's created to rule this beautiful creation that God has made, to develop it, to expand it. And into that story comes serpent, which is identified as Satan throughout Scripture. And comes to the woman and whispers to her, did God say you must not eat from the tree, any tree in the garden? Now, did God say? Most sin, some people reflect, comes from a doubting of the absolute beauty and the wonder and the goodness of God. And so Satan comes in and introduces a doubt about God into the woman's mind. Did God say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat fruit from the trees of the garden. But God did say you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it or you will die. Now the woman's getting into the spirit here, because when God told him not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, he didn't say, if you touch it, you'll die. He didn't say that. So she's kind of expanded on, she's buying into this. Maybe God's not as good as I thought he was. And as a result, she eats it. This is the way the enemy puts it. You will certainly not die, the serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it, and also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked, so they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. Now, what happened was, later, they are cast out when God comes seeking them. In the cool of the day, apparently, it was his custom to come and walk with these creatures who were created in the image, in his image, in the cool of the day. And he finds that they're nowhere to be found, and then he says, they're hiding. And he says, who told you? Who told you you were naked? Who told you? And they're pushed out of the garden so that they might not eat of the tree of life and live forever in this fallen condition. Now, chapter 3 of Genesis, if you're not aware of that, is titled The Fall. It's the fall of that crown of creation. Human beings who are supposed to be the caretakers of all creation, who are supposed to multiply and fill the earth with creatures like God, and in this beautiful, very good creation, and instead they're cast out, and we're told that an angel is placed at the entrance to the Garden of Eden so that they can't get in and live forever in that condition. So there was an impact of this, that the crown of creation now has fallen. It impacts creation. This is from the book of Romans. Romans chapter 1, verse 20. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we also, we ourselves are the first fruits of the Spirit, grown inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we are saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. This is from Romans chapter 8. I think I said Romans 1. Romans chapter 8. What happened was the creation itself has been corrupted. Now, there's a Christian doctrine called a total depravity of human beings, and that is that our tendency is toward evil. Our tendency as fallen creatures is to listen more to the enemy than to the good God who created us in his image. Now, total depravity doesn't mean that everything in us is bad or everything in the creation is bad. The creation remains beautiful and we retain something of the image of God in us that makes us respect everyone. But what it means is that everything in it is tainted. Again, I love the way that one theologian put it, said if you've got a beaker of pure water and you dump some sewage in it, it doesn't mean that every molecule in there is impacted negatively, but it does mean that the whole thing is somehow impacted, and it becomes, if you put sewage in it, something that's dangerous. Well, in a sense, we see that everything has changed with this introduction of evil into the garden. First of all, there's the cover-up. They realize that they no longer look the way they looked before. and they see that they're naked and they're ashamed. There are some theologians that I've done it myself in sermons say this is why we wear clothes, right? We don't want people to see what we are really like, or they might reject us. And so we wear clothes. We wear makeup, many of us, men and women. We cover ourselves up because we don't want somebody to see what we're really like, to experience what we're really like, because we have this sense in us that something's wrong in us. And then they're hiding from God. They're hiding from God. And our God introduces many disciplines. As you read through the rest of chapter 3 of Genesis, you'll notice there are disciplines. The man and the woman have to work now for their food. Before, they just walked through and they picked it wherever it was. They've got to work for their food. They are going to be subject to eating from the sweat of their brow. But God also predicted in Genesis 3:15 that marvelous promise that there's going to come a time that they're not going to hide from God anymore. In fact, he says as he curses the snake, the serpent, the enemy, he says, "Cursed are you above all livestock and all wild animals. You'll crawl on your belly and you'll eat dust all the days of your life. And I'll put enmity between you, hatred between you and the woman, between your offspring and hers. He will crush your head and you will strike his heel." In other words, God's speaking here to the enemy. And to the woman, he says, "I'm going to make your pains in childbearing very severe with painful labor. You're going to give birth to children." You know that, right? And to Adam, he said, "Because you listened to your wife and ate the fruit, I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you're going to eat food from it all the days of your life. It will produce," etc. Now, that one statement in there, verse 3:15, is a promise that they won't have to hide from God anymore. He says to Satan, "I'm going to put enmity or hatred between you and the woman, between your offspring," all those offspring of the enemy, the fallen angel, "and hers." Who's the offspring of the woman? Where there's only one person who's just the offspring of the woman and not the offspring of man in Scripture, and that's Jesus, the virgin birth. "He," that Jesus, "is going to come and crush your head and you will strike his heel." In the Passion of the Christ, there is a marvelous image as Jesus is in the garden. And truth be told, I learned how to add video into my PowerPoint presentations. And then I put that power presentation into the computer here at Christian Leaders Institute, and it won't play the video. So let me just describe what's going on here. Jesus is in the garden and of Gethsemane, and he is agonizing. He is, as one of the passages in the Gospels puts it, he is sweating drops of blood. And Satan's coming to him in the movie, The Passion of the Christ, and he's tempting him. He's saying, "It's going to be too much for you. No one can stand the weight of all the sin of all mankind." And then he releases a serpent to come near Jesus. And as the serpent comes, Jesus gets up and recognizes it's time. And he takes his heel and he crushes the head of the serpent. It's a powerful moment. In fact, when I went to see the movie in the theater when it came out many years ago, everyone applauded at that point, saying, "Yes, yes, it's happening even now." And it's fulfillment of that is on the cross of Jesus Christ that crushed the head of Satan. So this is how it got to earth and how it continues today. Now, one of the videos I wanted to show you and have you hear was a song by this man. His name is Don Francisco. When I was learning to play guitar, I'm a guitarist, I just loved some of the songs he came out with. His mostly style is to do a ballad about Bible situations and Bible stories. And he did one about, what happened in the garden. And so since I can't play it for you on the video, I've brought my speakers so that I can play it for you here. And so take a listen to "Adam, Where Are You?"
Unashamed and naked in a garden that has never seen the rain.
kingdom full of joy, never marred by any pain. The morning all around them seems to celebrate the life they've just begun. And in the majesty of innocence, the king and queen come walking in the sun. But the master of deception now begins with his dissection of the word. And with all his craft and subtlety, the serpent twists the simple truth they've heard. While hanging in the balance is a world that has been placed at their command. And all their unborn children die as both of them bow down to Satan's hand. Just before the evening, in the cool of the day, they hear the voice of God as he is walking. And they can't abide his presence, so they try to hide away. But still they hear the sound as he is calling. Adam! Adam! In the stifling heat of summer now, the gardener and his wife are in the field. And it seems that thorns and thistles are the only crop his struggles ever yield. He eats his meals in sorrow till he sinks into the dust whence he came. Down through the ages, he can hear his maker calling out his name. Adam's sons are still the prisoners of their fears. Rushing helter-skelter to destruction with their fingers in their ears. While the Father's voice is calling with an urgency I've never heard before. Darkness now before it's time to finally close the door.
Thank you. I know this class went a couple minutes over, and we'll make that up another time, but the call of a God who continues to seek the lost. See you next time.